intent of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Pat Perry from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the News and Observer and the New York Times. Today's reading of Money Matters is underwritten by Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. Today's stories include Health Law Sets Off Five-Alarm Fire Among Democrats and Big Business Worried About Fate of New Trade Agreement. And we'll begin with Health Law Sets Off Five-Alarm Fire Among Democrats. The decision by a federal judge in Texas to strike down all of the Affordable Care Act has thrust the volatile debate over health care into center stage, imperiling the insurance coverage of millions of Americans. The ruling, issued late Friday, delivers a possible policy opening to Democrats. After campaigning vigorously on a pledge to protect patients with pre-existing medical conditions, a promise that helped return them to the House majority they had lost in 2010, Democrats vowed to move swiftly to defend the law and to safeguard its protections. On the defensive, Republicans campaigning this fall promised that they, too, backed the health law's protections for people with pre-existing medical conditions. But the Texas ruling illustrates the fruits and possible perils of their long-running campaign, stepped up in the Trump era to remake the judiciary through the confirmation of dozens of conservative judges, including two appointees to the Supreme Court. The ruling, if it stands, would not only do away with coverage protections for people with pre-existing health conditions, but also strike down the guarantee of coverage for what the law deems essential health benefits. These include emergency services, maternity and newborn care, mental health and substance abuse treatment, prescription drugs, and pediatric care. The ruling is so sweeping that many legal analysts believe it's likely to be overturned. The Supreme Court, in a 5-4 decision, has already upheld the Affordable Care Act's legality. The political reaction to the Texas decision, though, is not likely to diminish anytime soon. "This is a five-alarm fire," said Senator Chris Murphy, Democrat, Connecticut. "Republicans just blew up our health care system." Republicans were by and large muted in their response, but incoming House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy of California appealed to Democrats to come to negotiate a successor to what he called an unconstitutional law. "President Trump has made clear he wants a solution, and I am committed to working with my colleagues on both sides of the aisle to make sure America's health care system works for all Americans," McCarthy said in a statement Saturday. In an email to millions of Americans on Saturday, the Trump administration tried to allay concerns caused by the court decision in the Texas case. "The case is still moving through the courts," said the message from the Federal Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. "The marketplaces are still open for business, and we will continue with open enrollment. There will be no impact to enrollees' current coverage or their coverage in a 2019 plan." But President Donald Trump was in a celebratory mood, tweeting, "Wow, but not surprisingly, Obamacare was just ruled unconstitutional by a highly respected judge in Texas. Great news for America." In his ruling Friday, Judge Reed O'Connor of the U.S. District Court in Fort Worth struck down the law on the grounds that its mandate requiring people to buy health insurance is unconstitutional, and the rest of the law cannot stand without it. The judge found that the myriad parts of the law are all interconnected. Without the mandate, he said, the rest of the law comes crashing down. And next, big business worried about fate of new trade agreement. Corporate leaders across America watching President Donald Trump fight with Democrats fear their chances of securing the newly revised trade agreement with Mexico and Canada is slipping away. Anxiety peaked last week after Trump's extraordinary 17-minute argument over border wall funding with Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi, who is expected to be House Speaker in January. The spat revealed the challenges Trump faces trying to reach any consensus with Democrats, let alone on one of Trump's controversial trade initiatives. Those concerns are real, said John Murphy, Senior Vice President for International Policy at the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. It arises from the reality that Canadian and Mexican markets are incredibly important to U.S. business and agriculture. They're not just our two largest export markets. They buy more U.S.-made manufactured goods than the next 10 countries on the list. It's supremely important. Trump and the leaders of Mexico and Canada signed a revised trade agreement late last month that was supposed to end an ugly dispute among the three nations. But the new United States-Mexico-Canada agreement can only be ratified by Congress, and Democrats who will take control of the House are showing they're reluctant to hand Trump any kind of political victory. Business leaders knew it was going to be hard and pressed the White House as well as sent lobbyists to meet with Republican leaders about completing the deal during the lame duck session of Congress. The period between the November elections and when the newly elected members began their terms in January. Manufacturers need certainty now, not later. With 2 million American jobs dependent on exports to Canada and Mexico, National Association of Manufacturers President and CEO Jay Timmons said in a statement last month, pushing for Congress to review the revised agreement before the end of the year. But Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, Republican, Kentucky, counted out that possibility. Then Trump threatened to scrap NAFTA without the revised deal in place, leading to near panic among business leaders that their best opportunity to ratify the new agreement had been missed. I don't think people fully realize how precarious all this really is, said one official at a major business group who was not authorized to speak publicly about concerns. It's going to shake confidence in the U.S. economy like it never has been shaken before. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce sounded the alarm earlier when President and CEO Tom Donahue backed the revised agreement but warned that Trump's threat against a co-equal branch of government by saying he would scrap the congressionally ratified NAFTA if they don't now take up the USMCA could cost needed votes to pass the agreement. Murphy said losing NAFTA without passing the revised agreement would have devastating impacts on U.S. businesses that depend on trade between the countries. The stakes are high for Missouri and Kansas, which has 145,000 jobs tied to trade with Mexico. Missouri and Mexico did $5.2 billion worth of business, and Kansas $2.7 billion. The 100-year-old railway, Kansas City Southern, for example, has invested billions of dollars on rail links into Mexico to transport agricultural and manufactured goods between the two nations. Eric Farnsworth, a former State Department official and now a vice president of the Council of the Americas in Washington, said he doesn't see how congressional leadership could bring up the measure unless they're certain they have the votes to pass it. Farnsworth is pushing for passage of the USMCA trade agreement. But Farnsworth, who also worked at the office of the U.S. Trade Representative, remembers the challenges of getting the original NAFTA through Congress in the George H.W. Bush and Clinton administrations during a time when Democrats and Republicans worked better together. Where does NAFTA even fit in terms of the overall agenda? And is there a political moment where the two sides can come together to pass this? Farnsworth said of the USMCA agreement, "I think that it is an open question." Robert Lighthizer, the U.S. Trade Representative who negotiated the deal, made clear that he was constructing a deal with the Democrats' priorities in mind, adding greater protections for labor and the environment. But Democrats are skeptical of some provisions on labor and environment. While there are positive things in this proposed trade agreement, it is just a list without real enforcement of the labor and environmental protections, Pelosi said in a statement after meeting with Lighthizer. Congress must approve the new agreement by voting on legislation that implements the provisions under the U.S. law, but no implementing bill has even been introduced to Congress. Senate Republicans called for the White House to push to ratify the new USMCA during the lame duck or face a possible quagmire getting the trade agreement passed. We are concerned that if the administration waits until next year to send to Congress a draft implementing the bill, passage of the USMCA as negotiated will become significantly more difficult, Senator Pat Toomey, Republican from Pennsylvania, wrote in a letter with 11 other senators last month to the White House. And next, weigh privacy risk while planning smart home. You might have heard of lights that turn off with an app or voice command, or window shades that magically rise every morning. Technology companies are pushing the smart home, hard-selling appliances and gadgets that offer internet-connected conveniences you didn't know you needed. But before you succumb to the temptation for yourself or others, consider that these devices might also give companies and hackers a key to your homes. Here's how to get started on your smart home and what to worry about along the way. A smart home can encompass features as simple as remote-controlled lamps and as sophisticated as thermostats that know when you're home and turn up the heat automatically. Down the line, you may want to mix and match those tasks into routines, such as a wake-up ritual that automatically starts the coffee maker, lifts the window shades, and plays the news. With the right tools, you can check remotely whether you remembered to lock the doors, and lock them if you forgot. Some systems can also create temporary digital keys for guests and contractors. Many people start thinking about a smart home when they get a voice-activated speaker, such as Amazon's Echo or Google Home, although such gadgets aren't strictly necessary. Nor do you even need actual smart lights and appliances, as you can buy smart plugs, adapters that control existing lights, or whatever you plug them into. If you catch the smart home bug, you can add appliances with the smarts already built in as you replace your existing ones. Major remodels also offer an opportunity to make bigger smart home plans. You probably wouldn't want to get a new window shade now, only to replace them with smart ones a year later. There are some concerns to keep in mind. Many devices are constantly listening for commands and connect to corporate servers to carry them out. Not everyone is going to be comfortable with live microphones in their homes, though your phone may already be doing the same thing. If you had enabled assistive features such as Hey Siri and OK Google, for the most part, recordings will leave home only when you trigger the device, such as by speaking a command phrase like OK Google, or pressing a button to get the device's attention. But an Amazon device mistakenly recorded and sent a family's private conversation to an acquaintance after the device mistakenly thought it heard the trigger word followed by a send message request. Check what safeguards a device offers before buying. Smart speakers, for instance, typically have a mute button to disable the microphone completely. Mozilla's Privacy Not Included project seeks to warn consumers about products with security or privacy problems. A general web search also might turn up complaints. In general, it helps to stick with major brands, as their corporate reputations are at stake if they're caught taking shortcuts. Bigger companies can also quickly fix security holes that crop up. Gadgets from startups and no-name brands may offer little or no protection. Those companies may be more concerned with rushing a product to market. Bigger companies, however, are also more likely to use your data for marketing, so consider the trade-offs. Even if a product works as intended, it may be leaving a record that can resurface after hacks, lawsuits, or investigations. Manufacturers, for instance, typically store the voice command their gadgets send over the Internet and use that data to help them personalize their services and potentially advertisements. These voice snippets may include music or conversations in the background. Reputable brands let you review and delete your voice history. Be sure to do so regularly. And think twice about smart locks and their digital keys. In a child custody dispute, for instance, your ex might subpoena the records to learn that you've been staying out late on school nights. If you rent, a landlord might suspect an unauthorized occupant if you create a guest key that's used daily. As cable and internet services become commodities, the companies behind them are turning to smart homes for new sources of revenue. AT&T's Digital Life and Comcast Xfinity Home offer cameras, door controls, and other smart home devices. The packages are good for those who prefer one-stop shopping, though you might save money and get more choices by shopping around. For the do-it-yourself approach, consider which company services you're already using heavily. If it's Amazon, then devices powered by its Alexa digital assistant might work best. There's a range of Alexa products, including refrigerators and washing machines. You can command an Alexa microwave oven to reheat one potato instead of having to look up how many seconds. It'll also reorder popcorn with a command from Amazon, of course. Likewise, if you're a heavy Google user, choose devices that support Google Assistant. Apple has products under the umbrella of HomeKit, while Samsung has SmartThings. Some products will work with more than one digital assistant. Some devices, especially cameras, come with extra fees for extended storage and other features, but in most cases, you do have to pay only for the product. And next, brands born on Internet embrace brick and mortar. Online retailers are getting physical. A growing number of brands born on the internet are now opening brick-and-mortar stores and moving into suburban malls once considered doomed as more Americans shopped online. But they're taking it even further by doubling down on the tactile experience. Online mattress retailer Casper, for instance, is opening stores that allow customers to book naps and test out mattresses before buying. Indochino, the online tailor, decided to borrow from the old Savile Row model where customers can be measured face-to-face for custom suits. Online brands have embraced clicks to bricks, said Faith Hope Consolo, chairman of Prudential Douglas Elliman's retail division. Shoppers love to touch, interact, and try on in person, and malls are upping the ante by offering immersive experiences that are exciting and memorable. The store openings mark a major shift for formerly online-only brands that just a few years ago believed that they didn't need a physical presence to generate robust sales growth. Digital natives are now finding that the cost of acquiring new customers online is soaring as competition for eyeballs has increased the cost of online ads on Google and other platforms. At the same time, opening a store has become more affordable as higher mall vacancies have prompted landlords to offer flexible leases and other perks. It can be 10 times more expensive to acquire a new customer online as it is with a physical store, said Jim Ward, who heads up recruiting for online brands for mall owner CBL. There are now roughly 600 stores across the country from these online natives, according to Green Street Advisors, a real estate research firm. Bonobos, which now has 60 stores and sells men's clothing, plans to have 100 by 2020. Online eyewear retailer Warby Parker, which opened its first store in 2013, will have nearly 100 stores by year end. Others are following suit. Casper plans to have about 200 stores in the next 2 to 3 years, up from the current 20. And Fabletics, an active sportswear brand co-founded by celebrity Kate Hudson, aims to quadruple the number to 100. For a brand that's less than 10 years old, new store openings means a 45% increase on average in online traffic, said a recent survey by International Council of Shopping Centers. Ron Harries, head of retail for Fabletics, said that opening physical stores wasn't in the company's original plan in late 2014, but it realized that a physical location could acquire customers more efficiently. This gives you an opportunity to reach customers who are not shopping online, Harry said. And next, Fed expected to hike interest rates. President Donald Trump on Monday urged the Federal Reserve not to raise interest rates, but Fed officials are widely expected to do so this week, despite the president's ongoing public effort to dissuade the U.S. Central Bank from putting any brakes on the economy. It is incredible that with a very strong dollar and virtually no inflation, the outside world blowing up around us, Paris is burning and China way down, the Fed is even considering yet another interest rate hike. Take the victory, Trump wrote Monday in a Twitter post. Fed officials will conclude a two-day meeting on Wednesday, and Wall Street traders predict nearly an 80% chance the Fed raises rates a quarter point this week, setting them at a range of 2.25% to 2.5%. That hike would keep rates low by historical standards, but put them at the highest level in a decade. The president's repeated exhortations against the Fed raising rates break with his predecessors, who generally avoided commenting publicly on the central bank's policies to protect its credibility and independence. Interest rate increases are meant to check inflation, but they can also slow the economy, adding another challenge to Trump's efforts to deliver on his promises of booming growth. A slowing economy or a recession could damage Trump's reelection efforts in 2020. While the U.S. economy looks strong right now, there are signs of a potential slowdown. The Dow Jones Industrial Average is on track to end 2018 in the red, notching the worst performance in a decade and erasing one of the president's top talking points that the market has thrived in his tenure. The housing market has also been weak, and business investment, which bounced earlier this year, dried up in the third quarter. Still, the Fed is worried about the economy overheating and says small, gradual interest rate increases are the best way to tap the brakes a bit to ensure inflation doesn't rise too quickly and bubbles don't form. Unemployment remains at an almost 50-year low, and growth is expected to be around 3% this year, well above the 2% the Fed thinks is normal for the U.S. economy. Wages are also growing at their fastest pace in a decade in nominal terms, a sign more inflation could be coming. Investors and the White House will be watching carefully Wednesday for what the Fed and leader Jerome Powell indicate is likely to happen in 2019. Next, Google announces $1 billion New York campus and 7,000 more jobs. Google said Monday it would expand its presence in New York City with a $1 billion campus in the West Village, allowing the company to double the size of its 7,000-employee workforce over the next decade. The centerpiece of the 1.7 million square foot hub will be the St. John's Terminal building on Washington Street, with Google also set to occupy space at two buildings nearby on Hudson Street. It is Google's second significant move to increase its Manhattan footprint this year. In March, it spent $2.4 billion to buy the Chelsea Market building, where it already had offices. At the time, a Google spokeswoman said the company also planned to add 320,000 square feet of space in a redevelopment of Pier 57 on the Hudson River. New York City continues to be a great source of diverse world-class talent, Ruth Porat, Google's chief financial officer, said in a statement on Monday. That's what brought Google to the city in 2000, and that's what keeps us here. Google will compete for that talent with Amazon, which announced last month that it plans to add 25,000 employees at a site in Long Island City, Queens. The city was one of two winners of a year-long contest to land the retail giant's so-called second headquarters. The moves in New York by Google and Amazon and Apple's announcement last week that it was adding a $1 billion hub in Austin, Texas, and thousands of jobs in other cities highlight the ways in which the search for talent is pushing giant technology companies beyond their West Coast roots. We've run out of time for today's episode of Money Matters. Today's reading of Money Matters is underwritten by Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. So long until next time.